Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We're positively here at Fadley's. We're at the new Lexington Market, not to be confused with the old Lexington Market. I still have this many Raven scratch-offs to give away. We're going to have some fresh ones next week. We bring the show. For the first time ever, we're doing the crab cake tour at a place that they don't have a crab cake. Don't tell anybody. But it's a Michi, so I'm allowed to do anything I want. We'll be there Tuesday. We'll be at Costas on Wednesday. We're here at Fadley's celebrating with, I don't remember you being this tall. Matt Gallagher was a part of the most shared video in the history of videos here. We have had almost 4 million views on it as to how to open a crab cake. And you did a little cameo, a little song and dance. And, of course, Matt Gallagher worked a long time with the city and the state with Martin O'Malley. And now Martin O'Malley's doing something else in Social Security, and Trump's about to become president again. And I'm like, I got to get Matt down here for the holidays to make me feel better about things. Now running Goldsecker Foundation. We talk about foundations in the city. How are you, man?
It's great to see you.
Crab
Happy
cake,
holidays.
Shrimp. Tickets.
Very nice.
Not hard to get you on the show. Hey, you want to come to Fadley's? What time you need me?
Pretty simple. Yeah, I mean, I'm here three times a month, generally. So
you gave me some story on the way over about Fadley's crab cakes being a part of your holiday.
Yep.
And this smoked mussels?
Smoked mussels.
I ain't never had one of those. So talk to me.
So across about a half a mile from here is Neapole Smokery. It's over in Holland's Market. They've got a branch in Belvedere Square. And if you ask me what, you know, my top 10 things to eat in Baltimore are, one of them would be Neapole smoked mussels.
Well, you know what? I had Dara Bungeon. Do you know who she is from Jay Moore? She's their food enthusiast at Jay Moore. She shared a recipe 3 weeks ago, a couple days before Thanksgiving, that was corn pudding. And I just borrowed it all. I looked at it, and I'm like, man, let's try that. We had some fresh Silver Queen corn that my wife shucked in August. She got it at the farmer's market. And it's in the freezer. And we're like, all right, to break it out, so we ate it. It was unbelievable. I invited her on the show. And so she started flirting with me on text a week before, like, talking
about... Sure, that happens to you a lot.
Yeah,
right?
Like, about food and about this and how I know of her. And she was so grateful that I was having her on. And she does her own podcast. She's wonderful. But sometime on the back and forth with the text, she's like, what are your favorite things to eat in Baltimore? And then she laid that on me in the show last week. We were at Coco's last week. She's like, so what are your other favorite things? And I had to really think that through.
Really?
So you just broke the glass ceiling for conversations here in regard to top 10. You're a real foodie, dude. Like, you love
– look,
you're skinny, but you eat, like me.
Big time.
So you really have this – you're like, my top 10. So I'm like, there's got to be 9 others. Let's go.
I mean, okay, but you're putting me on the spot. But off the top of my head, I mean, obviously, Fadley's, you know, is the best place for crab cakes.
This is your place. I know that.
This is Mecca. I'm huge on the Neapole smoked mussels. They're fantastic.
That's Belvedere Square is where
you can get them at Belvedere Square. Okay. You can get them at the Test Kitchen, which is about a half a mile from here. They're basically $1 a mussel. You can eat them cold. You can eat them hot. You can pop them in the oven, you know, 350 for 6 or 7 minutes. They have this amazing aioli that you put on them. They're out of this world.
See, the smoke thing is acquired. You know, you're not born loving smoke stuff. You sort of have to acquire that, right?
Yeah, I would say that's true. Yeah.
Well, Dan Rodrickson and I talked about the Feast of the Fishes, right? And the Feast of the Fishes is one of those things that smoke things are a part of that. And I didn't grow up with smoked fish in my house, so it's always just a little different. I don't know. I mean, it's not something I crave. It's not something that's familiar to me,
If you put smoked mussels into your rotation, I guarantee it's going to become a regular. And, you know, we have a big party the night before Thanksgiving. We call it the Seafood Extravaganza, and it's grown over the last 10 years.
So there's almost like Feast of Fishes, kind of, sort of,
it's
a little bit.
It's kind of, sort of, but it's more just like, what are, like, super easy things you can eat and have a couple of glasses of wine or beer or champagne, and people kind of come in and out. And my kids now are adults, so sometimes their friends come by. It's just basically like 3 to 4 hours of a happy hour with a lot of, like, really, really good seafood. You come down here and you pick up some crab cakes. You throw them in the oven for 10 minutes, and they're good to go. you put the smoked mussels in, they're good in 6 or 7 minutes, and people are just like, oh my God, I can't believe how great this food is. And it's like, yeah, you go to Lexington Market, and you go across to Hollins Market to
We are blessed in that
it's
way.
It's fantastic.
I mean, I say that to people all the time. Like, I love New York, and I'll go to New York. The thing I love about New York is I go there when there's good weather, it's flat, walk everywhere, and I am a grazer. See it in the window, eat it, pastries, pizza, whatever you want. Baltimore's more destination for me, where I think, like, if I were to take someone to my five places to eat, Amici's is one of them, right? Like, the Amici's meatball with the garlic cheese bread, forget about it. It's unbelievably good. Ekubin tempura broccoli, I'll go to sleep with it. I think Coco's coconut shrimp with the raspberry jalapeno. This is how we got into this conversation, because I text Dara Bungeon. I text her, have you had a Coco's crab? Because she's sure. I love you. Yeah, I'll be there. So, and I'm like, but have you had the coconut shrimp? So, no, it's like being here. If you haven't had the shrimp salad at Fadley's, unbelievable. I just had the steamed shrimp for the first time ever.
Oh, they were great.
So I think side dishes, the cucumber salad here is unbelievable. I wouldn't tell anybody, if you're going to Fadley's, you got to get the cucumber salad. It's unique. What are your other eight? Come on, man. You're like a foodie.
So that's
dude. You had an Asian joint you loved in Mount Vernon that you were trying to get me to, big time. A Thai joint. You had a Thai joint in Mount Vernon.
Yeah, that Thai joint is closed now.
It was a pop-up.
They have one in Hamden, and they have one in Federal Hill. Kun Nine Thai. Very, very good. Like, some of the largest portions of duck dishes I've ever seen. It's like $19, and you get this huge piece of duck, and you're like, this is fantastic. This is living. I don't know if I'm putting that on my top 10, so you kind of
jumped the line there a little bit. All right. Can we keep going here?
You know, in the holiday season, you'll see me at Cingale for a piece of veal lasagna, usually sitting at the bar. Just nice glass of red wine, piece of veal lasagna, unbelievable holiday comfort food. I'm always up at Woodley Bakery on Blair Road, and if I'm there, I'm picking up Schmierkäse, which is
I've never had that. Look, now, I go to Woodley all the time, but I'm a peach cake guy.
I know you're a peach
cake
guy.
I'm a peach cake guy.
And what always happens is when I post about the Schmierkäse at Woodley, you weigh in with, I can't wait, it's almost peach cake season, I'm going there. But you should pick up a Schmierkäse. It's a lighter. It's Smearcase. Schmierkäse.
Right.
It's in the lower part of the counter when you come in.
Well, there's always turnovers there.
It's a German style lighter cheesecake. And everybody that we introduce it to is like, oh my God, I like cheesecake, but it's too heavy or it's too much. This is perfect.
Is it a custardy kind of cheesecake? Would you call it like that? No.
I mean, look, I'm a big custard guy too. I mean, I would not call it custardy. I would describe it as a lighter style cheesecake.
I get the custard pies at Woodley because they're delicious. And I also get them around the corner of Fenwick, too. So Fenwick and Woodley, for me, I'm about their cookies.
Yeah, they're great cookies.
The chocolate chip cookies at Woodley are a top 20 item, top 5 bakery item for me in the city.
If I'm going cookies, I'm an Otterbein guy.
Oh, so, that's not my jam.
Well, that's the thing.
I'm not
Otterbein,
a burger guy either.
Otterbein used to be, they had a brick-and-mortar bakery, Lock Raven Boulevard in Northern Parkway. And I'm not the famous Gallagher's from Baltimore. I'm the firefighting Gallagher's from Baltimore.
Okay.
And our family and some of our other kind of families used to sell Christmas trees on that corner lot at Northern Parkway and Lock Raven Boulevard. And my uncles would send me over to the bakery, which was in that little shopping center, and I'd get sugar cookies, chocolate chip cookies, and then they had the best cheese buns in town.
See, Otterbein, like, when I think of that, I just think of the little sugar cookie. You know, like, so, that's what I think of.
They don't have any brick and mortar anymore. They do you can get cookies at Eddie's and Grawl's and places like that. They got a number on the website, and I call the number every year, and I'm like, hey, when can I get you to make the cheese buns again? And they laugh. And they know exactly what I'm talking about. Like, yeah, you know, that doesn't
that
pencil
crazy
out.
Crazy Gallagher guy again, huh?
Yeah, but I'll go anywhere for a good cheese bun. But I got Woodley at the top of the list right now.
All right, see, we're getting Baltimore hints here. I brought you over to talk politics and stuff.
I'm trying to be versatile.
That,
I'm trying to be versatile.
Well, you're known in my world as the crab hand guy from being in the video with Damien.
Please explain that a little bit better, because that didn't come out great, but the crab hand guy. But
you did a cameo in the crab hand video where only Damien's hands are in the video showing me how to properly open a crab, which I still would
and
cut
the,
my
and
hands.
And the lollipop off. Technique.
Have you done it?
I mean, I can't replicate it. Look. That whole thing blew my mind. I'd never seen that method, and I, you know.
Nor had I.
Picked thousands of crabs growing up in Baltimore.
And Moeller kept telling me I was doing it wrong. I'm like, how do you do it wrong?
No, I mean, look, she's at the top of her class, obviously, when it comes to picking crabs. But I learned a lot from that video, and I laugh every time it pops up in the feed, and it's 2 million, 3 million, 3.5 million.
I eat crabs for business. I eat them for pleasure. You know what I mean? I take my time. My parents, because we were poor and broke in Dundalk, every little kernel of meat, I know how to get all the meat out of the crab. I don't get frustrated with it. And then I see these people not from around here. They really do think we're crazy for going through all of that work and whatnot to do it. Tourists don't understand crabs in the way we do. That's more for us.
No, I'm not looking for competition on crabs.
So. All right. I'll get the other five eating things from you on your Facebook. Matt Gallagher's our guest. Matt ran government, did lots of things. What would I say about you? Like, what former government
utility infielder in Baltimore? Plays a lot of positions.
A lot of people thought he should have run for mayor. He's one of the reasons I ran for mayor, because he wasn't willing to do it. And you run Goldsecker, which is a foundation. You do lots and lots of things in charitable spaces, community. I could bring you back during Cup of Super Bowl in February and talk about that. State of the city, state of politics, Trump running the country, bridge down, this crazy murder with the Mangione family. Like, end of year, if I'm doing an end of year with you, had you come here in January I wouldn't have been here. You'd have been at the old Lexington Market in January. It's been crazy, man. Yeah. And I don't know that I'm ready for the Trump thing. And I'm trying to get with people like you. And I see Martin's sort of lost his mind again and said, get back in, and I want to have him on. Because, like, I think these last 4 or 5 weeks have been a weird little awakening to how to try to get used to that again. The dishonesty part of, did you lose the 2020 election, Mr. Trump? That's your opinion. Oh, boy, here we go again. And I'm not ready for that. So please get me ready.
Where do you want me to start?
At the beginning.
Okay, I was
giving you silence.
I was born in Baltimore. It's been a crazy couple of months. It's been a crazy couple of weeks. Look, I think for the vast majority of people, when you talk about government, it's what they see every day. It's local. It's who's picking up their trash. It's the police. It's the fire department. It's the crews fixing the streetlights.
Constituent services, as we say, right?
Yeah, but it's the things that you interact with. And I think that when you kind of go up the food chain and you go local, state, and then federal, people feel a lot more detached from those people who are in those leadership roles and those functions of government. You mentioned Social Security. I mean, they're sending out 70 million checks every single month. So for 70 million Americans, like, the most important probably function of government is that Social Security works and that those resources are there.
70 million is one out of six humans are kind of sort of, if we have 400 million people, is that right? So one out of six humans is of the, I'm about to get there. I'm 56. It's coming soon. I hope it's still there. And it's all they've known.
It's all anyone known
is 80 years old, their whole lifetime. This has been waiting for them since FDR told them when they were a kid.
Yeah, and it's probably the most important component of their retirement. So, like, that's a piece of government that really, really needs to function well, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, whether you're red, blue, green, purple, it doesn't matter.
And the post office had to get the checks there at one point.
Back in the day, yeah, that's true.
A little more direct deposit now, but that's still a factor.
Yeah, and I don't think there's a lot of people out there who want to rely on the post office right now. So,
listen, I would not be as openly I don't know what to say about it. I witnessed this for 4 years. I can't believe anyone would want to sign up for this again on behalf of any of us. And here we are. And it's been normalized, and it will become normalized again very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Once the fear gets out. I have an FCC license. He owns my license, right? Like, literally, under a dictatorship of whatever this would be, wherever. But the law is going to be tested.
Yeah.
And our people are going to be tested. In a way, we're not at war, but in many ways, there is a civil thing going on here when I land in red states that I just don't understand. Yeah. That I have a hard time explaining or even conceptualizing what this is going to look like and whether there's going to be an election 4 years from now.
Well, I mean, when I think about local and when I think about Maryland, I'm really happy and pleased that I live in Baltimore, that I live in Maryland, and that we have policies and leaders and institutions that I think are generally pretty reliable. And when people say to me, like, how do you explain, like, what happened in Pennsylvania or North Carolina or some of these swing states, it's tough to answer because I'm not there. I don't have exposure to it. But I feel like here we have constructive conversations about how to pay for public education. We have expectations that are put on our leaders in terms of we want things to get better. We want public safety to improve. You know, you look at a place like Fadley's, you look at a place like Lexington Market, you know, like you said, a year ago, we would have been a block away in a decrepit kind of fallen down building, and Fadley's was literally propping up the whole Lexington Market. And right now, after a lot of hard work by a lot of different people, you've seen a very significant transformation in Lexington Market.
This would have been a dream for you and Martin 20 years ago when you're running the city,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that there's money that is in Lexington Market that probably dates back to the time that Martin was in the governor's office, because these things take a lot of time. They're very complicated capital stacks. The real estate transactions are very, you know, tough. And you have handoffs between administrations, you know, mayor to mayor, governor to governor, you know, developer to developer. And it's fantastic what Seawall and Tebow Mannequin were able to do, the Public Markets Corporation. I mean, right now in the city, there's a little bit of a rebirth of the public markets going on. You know, Holland's Market just reopened. You've seen what happened at Cross Street. That's been revitalized. Broadway Market. People are starting to realize, like, hey, I go to Philadelphia, I go to Reading Terminal Market, I go to Seattle, I go to Pike's Market. They're like, these are fantastic places. Like, they're not just destinations, but they can be supermarkets too. And if you have food deserts, if you have, like, really significant community needs, and obviously there are a lot of community needs in Baltimore, you know, these markets can play a lot of different roles for the people who patronize them.
And they're better than they've been in my lifetime.
Probably. Absolutely.
Like, literally. I mean, I live near Cross Street. And by the way, Arsh Murmurin's been invited on. And I saw him down at the, I believe, Pearl Jam concert a couple months ago. So Arsh will come on and talk about the markets as well. Matt Gallagher's our guest. We're here at Fadley's. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Gold Sekhrin Foundations and that, and the importance of that. I want to give you some oxygen on that before we get back to politics
sure.
and the city and all of that, but what does your year look like? And what, you know, I don't want you to single out because I think you give to dozens of different places from what I remember, but a couple of successful things that have made you put a suit on and go out and work with some kids or some leaders or some elderly, whatever, because you're in all those pots with Goldsecker, and most people, and I'm a poor kid from Dundalk. I didn't know anything about foundations until people like you started teaching me, and I would see the Harry and Jeanette Weinberg on the wall and wonder what that's all about.
So we've been around for almost 50 years. We've given away about $140 million over those 50 years. We're going to give away $6 million this year in 2024. It's great. It's fun. You're dealing with like the most engaged, hyperactive people in Baltimore City who really believe in the people and institutions of Baltimore.
People are doing it, not talking about it.
Absolutely.
Right.
So like, you know,
and there are people here doing it. That's the point. I was at a Coppin event last night. My wife and I drove into the city, went to the Center Club. I'm like, my God, the amount of people and institutional knowledge and love in the room and care for Coppin and love of West Baltimore. You know, I feel that way about Dundalk. I feel that way about Baltimore.
Yep.
You know, we want more everybody to take care of their little neighborhood. And you see that in every neighborhood you go into. You see the people who care the most.
And if you can knit together enough of those coalitions and groups, and a block becomes a neighborhood, and a neighborhood becomes a district, and then suddenly it's the west side or the east side or whatever it might be, you can get momentum, and then it's not about the philanthropic resources. It's about the market forces taking over, and people want to live, work, play there if they feel like it's, you know, safe, a good place to raise a family, to grow a business. And ultimately, what we want is for our money to be seed capital, to germinate like really good ideas, get people behind them, prove the concept, and then hopefully additional investment, whether it's more philanthropic money or whether it's private money, comes in behind it, and it really sticks. So like a couple of weeks ago, we gave a grant to Holland's Market to help them put a supermarket in, because we want to see Holland's Market do really, really well. We gave a grant to a
because that'll make the neighborhood do well around it.
Totally.
I mean, that's
totally
where we are.
Food desert, people are underserved. You know, these are capital intensive operations. They have a lot of startup costs. If we can help get them going.
They still got the pizza joint over there that's delicious at Holland's Market.
Is it Zella's?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a pizza over there. It was fantastic.
It is good pizza.
The mayor sent me there, by the way. Mayor Scott sent me there when he was a city council president.
So across the street is a place called Rooted Rotisserie. I don't know if you've heard of this yet. It's a black-owned BYOB restaurant. I think they may have just gotten there.
Oh, that dude went there. The famous foodie guy went there, right?
Well, hey, okay. I mean, I'm glad he kind of – he must have followed me on Facebook or –
because it was your joint first?
Look, back in March. I'm not – I don't want to brag, but we had that –
well, you are
we had
a foodie,
that
Matt. That's why I bring you on.
We're an early adopter, but their food's fantastic, and now you can't get a reservation. And, like, once you get, like, one or two places like that, then you start to get some critical mass, and then people – it just kind of feeds on itself. And that's what you hope to do when you seed some of these organizations and some of these initiatives all around the city.
Tough week here. Matt's a real Baltimore guy. You live in the city, you run the city, you care, all of that. Man, this Mothers, and I've known Dave Rather since he had empty pockets down on Ford Avenue back in the early 90s. I remember when Mothers opened. I remember my first business partner. We ate in what would become Mothers when it was the little diner. A little morning diner at the time, back 30 years ago. And then Nacho Mamas, right?
I know.
And I'm assuming you knew Scunny, right? I mean, everybody knew Scunny.
I mean, I knew him. I wouldn't say I was close to him like many of my friends
were.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
I was close to him.
I spent a lot of time there.
Yeah, and...
and at Mother's, too.
These are such a kick in the balls for the ethos, you know, for people out in the suburbs who... talk about the city or whatever, and I'm in Towson, and the Berea quesadillas, not to mention the salsa at Nacho Mama's, and I had Finn on a couple weeks ago, Scunny's son. We did the show up at Mama's on the half shell. Thankfully, that'll stay open. Bring the salsa over there, Finn, please. Put some nachos at the bar for your father, for me, for some for our friends. But it's hard, man. And I said to my wife even this morning, a little bit teary-eyed almost. I'm like, you know, the day Scunny died, you had to know that Nacho Mama's was on life support unless... someone would come in there and give it the kind of energy that brought it to life.
Yeah.
I mean, Damie is here doing the work, and her son's right. They're in the shot. Hi. They're doing the work that their grandfather did, bringing fresh fish in here. That's a really hard thing to do. You establish something, even when it's 25, 30 years. Great example. My buddy Chad Wiesling and I were in Highland Town late one night. We went into the Snake Hill Bar right there. And we were talking about Hausner's. And nobody in the bar knew anything about Hausner's. And they were sitting as close to Hausner's as I am to that fish sandwich over there.
Right.
And they didn't know the history of Hausner's and the art and all that. And I'm thinking all of these things die if they don't have the butterfly flapping with the energy.
Yeah.
If it doesn't have that energy underneath of it, it can't function. And the city needs these spaces to have humans.
Yep.
Do what Scunny did. Do what Damie's over here doing right now. Do what Dave Rather did when he built Mothers. And if it doesn't have that, it's not sustainable.
Yep.
In modern life. It has to have real functioning Oompa Loompas making the food, making
yeah,
the chocolate.
Well,
you know?
They both had fantastic runs. They're both fantastic places. I don't want to see them close. I was still patronizing both of them. But there has to be some level of renewal. And if it's not happening within that particular restaurant, we need other people to step up and kind of fill those spaces and fill those voids. And, like, it kills me that both of those places are going to close, and they were definitely in my rotation. But then you got to find the next place that's going to go into your rotation that has a similar vibe that, you know, that you can kind of recreate the experience.
The same way we stopped going to Chi-Chi's when Scunny opened Nacho Mama's, right?
Yeah.
Literally, right?
Yeah.
They're bringing Chi-Chi's back for chains. A man who does not eat the chain restaurant food. He is eating good in the neighborhood without Applebee's. Matt Gallagher's here. He's with the Gold Secker Foundation. They do amazing thing around amazing things around the community in regard to philanthropy and philanthropic efforts. I am from Dundalk today. We're at Fadley's. You've already had a crab cake, right? You're down.
I did.
Looked over, and next thing you're there. You're all 6'5".
You said I'm coming on at 1, and I mean, look, I've usually had lunch by 1 o'clock, so I couldn't wait.
All right. Well, I mean, it's all good. Outlook on the city. I haven't had you on since the bridge collapsed. The Trump thing, navigating that, and your old partner Martin O'Malley, who I'd like to get on and chat with him. Robbie Leonard's coming a little later on. You know, Robbie ran in Baltimore County on the court side, on the Democratic side.
Voting member of the Democratic National Committee.
Okay, so that is where I'll let you start on that, because he put that out candidly 5 days ago. I saw him put that out. And he said, yeah, if you want to pony your money up, fly all over the place, you can get the vote too and be a part of that. And I'm like, all right, dude, I got to get you down here to talk about it. So he had a little court docket. He's the one that switched with you on the docket today. He's going to be here later. What's happened to the Democratic Party, bro? I mean, like, we could talk about Trump and the lies and the prison and the insurrection. We could talk about any of that. What the hell happened here the last 4 years? Other than inflation and groceries and, you know, what do you have to lose and all of that? Like, I cannot believe this happened. But then I look at it and I thought, well, Joe Biden wasn't doing so well at the end. And certainly I think that first debate was a mess. I think the morning I woke up and said, Kamala's going to be the person. Well, she's black and she's a female. Can she win? That's the first question I have. How's that going to play? I'm voting for her. I'm in. I would vote for a sewer rat. I would vote for that orange cone there before I would vote for Donald Trump. But clearly 70 million people don't feel that way. And I can't get over it.
Look, I mean, we're a divided nation right now. And it's pretty razor thin in terms of the number of states and the literally tens or hundreds of thousands of people who are deciding elections right now. And there are just two very decidedly different worldviews in terms of what the federal government should be doing and what they're looking for in their leader. I mean, if you ask me, you know, coming after COVID and all of the COVID shocks to the market and supply chains and all that type of stuff, was it crazy that inflation kind of went off the charts for a little while? No, it wasn't crazy at all. Like, that seems like a pretty reasonable thing. But, you know,
any economics class would have taught you that in 1983, right?
Yeah.
If there's a plague and a shutdown, if they would have given you that scenario in master's course of economics, you would say there will be hyperinflation. There will have to be.
And look,
in the same way, when we throw everybody with my skin color out of this country, good luck finding a blueberries for $4 a quart. Right?
But I mean, like, for a very significant part of the population, unless you were around in the, you know, the mid 1970s. And I was a little kid at that point in
time. Jimmy Carter lost an election.
Jimmy Carter, and you saw the long lines at the gas tanks, which is probably one of my very first memories as a kid. The vast majority of people have never lived in an environment where there's 3 or 4% inflation, let alone 6, 7, or 8%. So that is a real shock.
Well, very few people in our lifetime have lived through 4% unemployment either, right? I mean, the employment rate in this country, all-time high.
Yeah.
More people are employed than have ever been, you know, capacity from what I understand, which is one of the reasons we have millions of undocumented immigrants who basically prepare every piece of food we have in this society.
That's true.
And if you don't respect that and understand that, then you're just, you're an idiot. I don't know what else to say. You're just not getting out.
Well, I mean, look, it's really, really tough, because I think for all of the economic indicators that we're going in the right direction and all the things that we're improving and all this, the relative stability there was over the last 4 years, if you're not feeling that and experiencing that in your own household, like, you're kind of missing the boat and you're still aggrieved, you're still upset, you still have a huge amount of anxiety. And I think that as a party, you know, there has to be just an incredible and consistent and sustained emphasis on communicating everything that they're doing to make your life better, easier, safer, fairer, more equitable.
Well, it's called Obamacare, and that was put on – was that put on – that by the Democrats or by the Republicans? It was put on it by the Republicans to disparage Barack Obama, right? And yet millions of people use Obamacare and have in their families, in their direct line over the last 10 years, had a medical situation that without it would have absolutely been catastrophic for their family, right?
Nope, absolutely. And you think about all the 24, 25, 26-year-olds who are covered on their families'
Mommy and Daddy,
policies right
yep.
now. And there's no alternative to that. Like, that is the system. That is what's in place. And for all the people who railed against it, you don't really see any robust conversation about how to replace it, because there's just really no idea in terms of how to do that. So,
well, that's the thing about the 4 years of Trump that I saw very clearly is, and through all of these campaigns and these hate speeches and these, you know, lily white Nazi looking rallies that have been going on, there's no policy. And you're the policy wonk, Matt Gallagher. You know, you're the guy that's like, okay, we can vote for that guy, but at the street level, every program in the federal government has to function.
Yeah.
And all of the Matt Gallaghers that people like Martin O'Malley put you in charge of things, they're all miscreants who are there to fundamentally, I mean, Vince McMahon's wife is going to run education. She's never educated anything in her life other than herself. I mean, like, what's going to happen to transportation? I was talking to Bill Cole this morning on the show. I said, Pete Buttigieg, how's the bridge getting built? How's anything going to get built with people running the government who hate government, who literally hate the foundational principles of government, right?
Yep. Look, I'm not saying this is good news, but the truth is that, like, the government survived a pretty rigorous stress test for 4 years. And I don't think a lot of us didn't want to see another stress test so soon, but we're going to get another stress test. And hopefully the institutions can hold up, and hopefully there will continue to be a very, very bright light, like, shown on everything that's kind of going on, because you have to have
whistleblowing is what we need, right? I mean, whistleblowing is going to be...
There's been a lot of whistleblowing over the last 4-8 years. You know, it's hard to say, like, people didn't know what they were getting into with this choice and this decision. But
well, the boxes of files in the bathroom at Mar-a-Lago are, you know,
but it's not going to be until there's new fallout from the decisions that are made. And look, I you're very kind calling me a policy guy. I'm a policy guy. I'm into ideas. I'm into functional government. Like, that's kind of where I made my bones when I was kind of, you know, coming up in my professional career. The reality is, when you get into a campaign setting, every candidate wants to talk about policy. Every candidate wants to win on policy. And policy is probably less than 10% of the kind of the algebra
people
equation.
People don't vote.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way these Republicans are voting on policy.
No, it's personality.
80 million people that voted on something that had nothing to do with policy.
It's personality. It's perception. It's, you know, can you harness the grievance of your potential coalition and make them feel like you're going to make more progress on those issues or ideas than the opponent does? And it's unfortunate. And it's, you know, it's one of the reasons I'm a huge believer in kind of a free, unbiased, nonprofit press. We've been huge supporters at the foundation of the Baltimore Banner, because people just need more information to make better decisions. And I think it's really, really important, like, as you're evaluating these decisions and these trade-offs and, you know, what the right approach to this is, to have more outlets out there kind of in an unbiased, fair way reporting on these things. And you're obviously in the media environment right now. You've seen the contraction. You've seen the fewer number of newspapers. You've seen just a lot of crazy stuff going on within the industry right now. And we have become big boosters of nonprofit journalism because we really think slash hope, pray that that's going to be the future.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, as a banned Ravens journalist, where this week my employee has a church obligation on Sunday and cannot drive to the Meadowlands on Sunday, and I am banned. So my organization has, you know, I've seen this on the what sports teams are willing to do when they're taking $600 million of government money that, I mean, you worked in that environment, giving any billionaire group $600 million worth of state money to fix up their shed is really far-fetched, but sports gets away with that. And I am exhibit A on that side. I'm worried on the governmental side as to what this is going to look like. And more than that, how it gets couched, how the media has been during this century really used as the mouthpiece for whatever political cause you want to use it for, right? Like what Fox News, taking the word news and usurping that word as something that creates legitimacy, that does not create legitimacy any more than the World Weekly News did when we walked out of the checkout counter and aliens were taking over the planet, right? The Sinclair people buying the Sun is in, I mean, that's happened this year, right? So there really has been, who do you believe? And when I hear the President of the United States say that's your opinion about a fact, that's worrisome to me. The worrisome part is the disinformation that I've seen settle in and what I read about Russian disinformation from 50, 60 years ago, that this is a part of this. And
well, have some hope. Look, I mean, the banner, look, there's an incredible experiment going on in Baltimore right now with nonprofit journalism. And what Stuart Bainum did to pump $50 million into the startup of the banner is not happening anywhere else in
the country. I was going to ask you, there's nothing else like it, right?
There's nothing else like it. It's growing faster than any other nonprofit news organization in the country. As of last month, they had eclipsed 51,000 paid subscribers, and they've got the largest newsroom in Maryland right now. So, you know, when I talk to people...
And 2 years ago, it didn't exist.
It didn't exist.
Right, yeah.
They got a newsroom down at the Inner Harbor. They are covering stuff in Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County. Like, they are, I think, the premier news organization in Maryland right now. And that's happened in 2 years. And it's
But
really,
if a Republican picks it up, he's got to trust that it's factual. That's really the issue, right?
Yeah, but I think that when they start with their focus on local news, I really do think it all gets back to local. All these issues that you've ticked off, all these places, all of these kind of concerns about where people live in their neighborhoods, you know, it's going to be authentic. People know that because they've been to places like this. They see, you know, they know these pieces. You know, you talked about the situation with the Mangionis, like right now. An incredible family who've done amazing things in Baltimore, and they're going through this like personal tragedy right now. You can't, you know, go 3 feet without bumping into somebody who knows one of the Mangionis right now. And they're sympathetic to what that family's going through, and obviously the victim of what happened in New York as well. But like when you start with a focus on local, you're local, I'm local, we know what's going on. Like, you know, we can evaluate what's fair and what's not fair and what is honest and not honest.
And what's working and what's not working.
Yeah, because you see it with your own eyeballs. You see it when you drive home. You see it when you come to Fadley's. You see it when you go to work, whatever it might be. You have like a lived experience. And hopefully that local journalism is capturing that on the ground reality and hopefully is providing coverage that's going to enhance what happens in those places. Holding local and state government accountable, figuring out what the plan's going to be, you know, what's going to happen with the replacement of the bridge, educating people that if the commitments that the current administration made are not honored by the next administration, that they have that information and they're equipped to make a decision going forward that, like, wait a minute, how could you not support the rebuilding of the Key Bridge? You know, like, that, those are the kind of things that we got to constantly bring up. And I think with all of this competing media out there right now, like repetition and constantly kind of going back to these things is really, really important.
Matt Gallagher's our guest. He runs the Gold Secker Foundation. We're here at Fadley's. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We have some Raven scratch-offs to give away. It's a little dark today. It's wintry out. We encourage everyone to order your crab cakes ahead of time. Damie gave me this great kitchen towel, and you can sing crabs for Christmas, but I do love that it's got crabs and Christmas trees on it. They have all sorts of gifts. You can go to FadleysCrabCakes.com if you want to ship and order the crab cakes down here. I don't know, last thing for you on the hope side of Baltimore, and give me some things that are lifted in Baltimore as you see it. Yeah, a couple of reasons to jump on board other than just the baseball team might be good and the football team has been struggling, but you live here and you're down here. I'm down here 2-3 days a week no matter what. I was here last night. I'm here today. I'll be at Amici's. By the way, Chris Corman, Baltimore Banner sports editor, is my guest at Amici's on Tuesday. So
cool.
We will talk more about the Banner
next week. But no crab cakes, right?
Pane Rotundo, we're going to have that sit in. It's as good as a crab cake, and that's very hard to say that. But come on, you're an Amici's guy, you know?
Oh, no, I like Amici's, yeah.
I just had it's my Arnold's from Happy Days. It's my place, so I want to go down there and do the show. So that's what we're going to do.
That's great.
I'm bringing the band. So for you with the city, what are you digging?
It's really exciting right now that some progress is finally being made on homicides and non-fatal shootings. You know,
that's a lead story, right? Crime has always been the lead since I've known you, right? Crime in the city. Crime's coming down. That's a good thing.
That is a very good thing.
That's a good lead story.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And look, I mean, between 2014, you had under 300 homicides. You had under 200 homicides 1 year. We've had a horrible run between 2015 and last year. Everybody's got their fingers crossed that, you know, we're turning the corner and that we're going to be able to sustain this progress going forward. It's really, really great that between what's going on in city government, the state's attorney's office, the federal prosecutors and the U.S. attorney's office, and then having, you know, a state government where the public safety apparatus is really engaged on what happens in the city, it's so hard to kind of get all of that alignment at the same time. And you really, really need all of that stuff working together if you're going to start make progress. And we've had a good run, and we just got to keep that sustained, because if people don't feel safe, you know, coming into Baltimore or living in Baltimore, it makes everything else hard. Economic development, public safety, public transportation, public health.
Tourism.
Yeah. If you've got those strong public safety kind of headwinds that you're going into all of the time, it makes everything else so much more difficult. But the bottom line is, like, look, still an incredible place to live, still has incredible culture, still has incredible affordability relative to other cities. Like, you know, if you want to buy a house in Baltimore, it's a much more realistic proposition if you're a cop, a firefighter, or a teacher.
Than if you're in LA.
Than if you're in DC Philadelphia or New York.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why you see, like, a wave of these, like, huge accomplished artists leaving New York and Brooklyn and all of these places and coming down here, because you can still get incredible affordability here, but you still have Amtrak and I-95, and you can access everything else that's going on the East Coast.
Including the crab cakes here at Fadley's.
Oh, yeah, the best.
Matt Gallagher is here. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have Raven Scratch-Offs giveaway. We'll be at Amici's on Tuesday. We will be on Wednesday wrapping up the holiday portion at Costas in Dundalk. We're actually doing it in the bar there next week. Lots of friends stopping by. Too many to mention. I got Ruffin Bell from Coppin State going to be joining us here momentarily. Coppin State ladies winning out in the desert last week. And Dr. Anthony Jenkins also very supportive of what we're doing here for our Cup of Super Bowl. We're going to be back here at Fadley's, as well as all of our sponsors the week of the Super Bowl for that. Dude.
Always great to see you.
You need to come up with number 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And we need to go eat something neither one of us have ever eaten that's like Hotsy Totsy. Have you been to the Hotsy Totsy ramen place at 27th and Greenmount?
The Toki Underground?
Yes.
I have not.
That's so what we need to do.
Happy to go with you.
That's on my list.
Okay.
That's on my list. And my wife's going out of town for 2 weeks, and you and I like ramen. We're going to do that.
All right.
Good.
Game on.
Matt Gallagher, a government man, Gold Secker Foundation, Baltimore eater. Is that fair enough to say that?
Very fair.
All right. There. Cool. I'm Nestor. We're back for more here at Fadley's. Robbie Leonard's going to come by. We're going to talk about the Democratic National Party and voting and how people get elected and who the next person up is going to be in the Democratic Party, and I hope it happens soon. I'm back for more. We're at Fadley's. Stay with us.